Tomorrow's Wall Street Titan might be an AI bot. 40% of all open job roles in finance today are for AI-related hires, and almost half of firms cite AI as a way to improve customer experiences. Find out more about the impact of AI on finance later in the podcast.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Emily Chang, and this is The Circuit. Today, we're on a film set like no other. We've landed in Colombia to visit Netflix's most ambitious Spanish-language project yet, 100 Years of Solitude. The book, by the famous author Gabriel García Márquez, is being adapted into a series for the first time. There's a cast of thousands involved, including director Alex García López.
Do you think this can be a global hit?
I don't know. I mean, I think you do a project and then once you finish it, it kind of goes out there and has its own life. I think Netflix in the last few years are taking a big gamble in a very good way.
Netflix has been pouring money into productions outside the United States, leading to a string of international breakout hits like Squid Game from South Korea, Lupin from France, and Roma from Mexico.
Hollywood has always traditionally exported content. People have seen those stories. They love those stories. And now what I think is great is that we have provided access for lots of different languages and genres to be exported around the world.
At the forefront of turning Netflix into a window for the world is Bella Bajaria, a London-born executive who turned down fame to work behind the scenes. The former Miss India Worldwide landed a job as an assistant at CBS and climbed her way up. Now, she's leading the Netflix team that's delivered award-winning shows like Wednesday, Beef, and Dahmer. But increasingly, she's betting the show is on the road. On this edition of The Circuit, I sit down with Netflix Chief Content Officer Bella Bajaria to talk about the company's global strategy.
You rose through the ranks in traditional broadcast networks. Then you started running international for Netflix, then all of global TV. Now you're running all of content. Tell us a little bit about your background and how does that inform your philosophy on content today?
So I'm Indian and lived in Zambia and in Africa and in London when I was younger and moved to America as an immigrant. And I grew up watching Bollywood movies. I grew up watching different British content and I was always exposed to lots of different things from different countries. And when I moved to the U.S., I really didn't understand really American culture. And at that point, I had a British accent. And so I watched a lot of TV and film, one, to lose the accent, and two, to really try to understand American culture. And so the power of seeing yourself or not ever seeing yourself is a really personal thing for me. Hollywood has always traditionally exported content. People have seen those stories. They love those stories. And now what I think is great is that we have provided access for lots of different languages and genres to be exported around the world and have local storytelling. It's a very powerful thing to see yourself represented on screen and to see your culture explored and so specifically nuances, your culture, your country. And we do that in all of these countries with local, authentic storytelling. And if you really think about it traditionally, to see something in non-English film, that used to be like in an art house film. That's if your city had an art house, you know, theater, and sometimes it was a drive if you were going to do that. And now just the access to be able to watch The Crown and scroll right over and watch The Glory from Korea or watch Lupin from France is all there. And providing that kind of access is an extraordinary thing. And for me, it feels very full circle.
Yeah.
From not being seen or not feeling seen on TV and entertainment, but also really learning American culture through television and film.
You're in charge of content. That's a huge job. How do you decide what millions of people around the world want to watch?
So it is a huge job, and it's a really fun job. And it's interesting because people have I think it's always about the audience, right? And people around the world, and everybody has different tastes and different moods, right? Even for you personally, right? Sometimes you're in the mood for a comedy, and sometimes you're in the mood for an immersive drama. Having the teams around the world in all of these countries, because there's local creative executives who work with local creative ecosystems with writers and producers and in their language, and really sort of look at what does the audience want, right? And it really starts with a writer walks in the door. The one thing that is consistent around the world, it doesn't matter what language it is in, a filmmaker or writer walks in the door, they pitch something, and it's the gut and judgment and intuition of creative executives who just, there's something special in that tone. There's something really specific in that voice. Audience will love it. It's bold. It's original. It's fresh. You just feel something. And that's really how you decide. It's definitely art, not science. But there's no other way than just that human connection of listening to a story.
That's interesting because I think so many people think because of technology, because of algorithms, there is a lot of science to it. So how much is it an algorithm versus intuition?
Oh, it's very intuition. Look, and I think there's always, you know, data that can give you, that can inform you. You know, there's renewal things and lots of different things you can look at it. But the what's the next thing to greenlight, a film or a TV show, is all art and creative and gut and judgment. There's not an algorithm in the world that would say, you know, you should really make a show about road rage that turns into really a show about human connection and loneliness, like Beef actually really explored. Or you should really make a period show about a woman playing chess. There's no way that anybody could say, like, that's the formula. Mm-hmm. It really is relationships and just gut and judgment and intuition. And I think having also that we have 27 local country offices and creative executives who speak the language or from the culture who can really understand the nuances. And so they can really connect with a writer or filmmaker to decide what to make next. There is no other way to greenlight the next best great thing.
So what is the formula for an ideal Netflix show?
So I find it really funny when people ask me, because people do ask me, you know, what is a Netflix show or what is a Netflix movie? And in a way, I think it's an old-fashioned question because I think people are used to like a narrow programming of, you know, a specific network that really has a very specific demographic, or they have a kind of certain lane that they program. And we don't do that. We have over 250 million accounts around the world, across so many countries, and no other company has really, you know, aspired to make this much great film and TV around the world, in so many languages, across so many genres. And we're trying to entertain people with various backgrounds, various demos in different countries. Our business is we make film and TV, and that's the core of what we do. And if you like something because you find something, you discover something, and you're in the mood for that, and you love it, and you recommend it, and then you come back, to me, that's the ideal experience.
I've heard you use this term super serve before. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
To me, that means somebody in your house loves unscripted shows, and they like to watch dating shows, and they click play on Love is Blind. That really super serves that need, right? That audience loves dating shows. That audience likes unscripted. Or they discover something new, but it's something that really meets you where you are in that kind of mood or need. People have so many different tastes. Like last year in 2023 was interesting. Too Hot to Handle Germany was number one, as was All Quiet on the Western Front. Mm. Very different.
So different.
Very different. People love one or the other, and many people love both. Mm-hmm. And to understand that audiences have a wide range of tastes and moods. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's super serving, you know, those needs.
Connecting human-led responsible AI with rich data sets is driving financial innovation in new and unexpected ways. Imagine a bank that uses AI to help detect fraud, or a personalized financial planning tool that knows when you want to retire and where. Pretty amazing, right? But financial services companies need a secure and resilient network to support AI architecture. With the Next Level Network from AT&T Business, AI data travels at low latency through reliable, fast connectivity, so financial leaders can focus on what matters most, a better future for their businesses and their customers. Learn about connected solutions from AT&T Business at att.com/y-att-business.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Latin America is the first place Netflix started making originals a decade ago. Mm-hmm. What's different today after being there for, you know, 10 plus years? Mm-hmm.
So our first non-English show that we did an original when we really were going to start expanding into originals outside of English was Club de Cuervos, which is 2015. And Latin America has had a rich history of storytelling and so many great movies and TV shows, and there's great creative ecosystem there. And what's been great is just to see it continue to grow and to continue to expand the variety and quality of what we do. And slowly it was opening the Mexico City office and opening Brazil and hiring local teams there. And that means local creative executives and local production executives and really having people on the ground who speak the language, who come from the culture, and to really work locally in that community. And that's taken time to build and grow and have that maturity in that market that way for us. And what I think is so exciting to see this year in 2024 is that this year Latin America is making, at the same time, which is really fun and challenging, three of the most ambitious projects that we have ever taken on in Latin America. And that's 100 Years of Solitude in Colombia, which is just beloved, but just trying to tell that story and the scope of that story is just a really big, ambitious production to take on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and in Brazil, doing Senna, the most famous, beloved Brazilian athlete there. And it's been interesting because we've had Formula One, Drive to Survive, and really being able to grow the fandom of that sport also. But to tell that story of Senna and his life and a life cut way too short, but to recreate races and mm-hmm. and that period aspect of that, you know, has been, you know, an incredible challenge, but so rewarding. Mm-hmm. Ella Tornato is, again, such beloved comic and IP. It's ambitious in the one sense that they're very beloved stories and really important IP and characters in a story that people really love and feel a connection to, and the responsibility of wanting to do that really well. And then the other side, the ambition of just actually sheer scope and scale, which is a lot, but very exciting.
How ambitious is Macondo on the scale of other Netflix projects? What gave you the confidence that this should be the project?
You know, there was a lot of passion around it and a lot of thoughtfulness of a whole team as far as our executives and the producers and director and everybody involved saying this is so special. And it's taken us a long time to really figure out how to put it together. How do you actually tell that story over that time? And look, it's always a little scary. There's confidence in it for sure, because I think we just have so many talented people, but there's also a real passion and pride of really capturing this and doing justice, really, to the material. And so it was always scary going in, and I'm sure Paco may have told you that along the way, but it's also one of those stories, and I'd say sort of all three of these in Latin America that we're doing, that were, we just have to have this. We have to tell the story. Audiences are gonna love it. Like, the swing is, it's a big one, but it's so inspiring and it's exciting, and it just felt like our audiences would love it, and it was just one of those that we just had to have.
Is the goal a local hit or a global hit?
The goal is always a local hit. So the goal always starts with very specific, authentic storytelling. And what you want is you want people in that country and in that language to love it, that it really resonates with them. It's very relevant. I still really believe the more specific and authentic something is, the more universal it actually is. And I think when people set out to make a global hit, you try to make something for everyone, and so you make something for no one. And so the idea of really resonating locally is the most important thing. Hmm. And we've seen that time and time again with the shows that have resonated. They were made for their country. They were made such local storytelling. There was such cultural specificity and nuances that really resonated with that country. And then it just ended up connecting with a larger audience and word of mouth and conversation. And we've seen that happen time and time again.
How much is Netflix spending on content in Latin America? And how does that compare to other regions?
We have great investment in Latin America. You know, we have a big global content budget that we spend. You know, and we also have a wide range, if you think about between nonfiction and docs and scripted and scripted and films around the world in different languages. So there's really investment in different countries. Latin America has always, you know, because we've also been there the longest outside of, you know, the U.S., so that's always had, like, a very healthy investment.
So take us around the world. Where are you really leaning in? Where do you see the most potential beyond Latin America?
Okay, we have 27 local country offices, which means teams there making local things. We also make TV shows and movies in 50 different languages in 50 different countries. There's so many things in these countries. And so it hasn't been so much that this one place has more potential than the other. When Japan is looking at, you know, what's an amazing slate and taking a mix of live action and film and anime and taking sort of manga IP and adapting that. Sometimes they do it in Japan, we also do it in the US. Mm-hmm. You know, so they can look at their slate that way. The one thing that is consistent is there's amazing storytelling in all of those places. And that's actually the one real consistent thing around the world. It doesn't matter which language you're doing it in, how do you find the next best film or series? Take India, for example. So they can watch things in South languages or Hindi. They also watch English content. But they also love La Casa de Papel. So they watch Spanish things and they love Korean content. So it's not even my language and English. It's this language and lots of different around the world. And so what I think has just been amazing to see is the growth in many of these different countries outside of the U.S.
People seem to be getting over subtitles. Like, would you agree? And I wonder, is Netflix behind that?
Look, I think Netflix has really offered this access. Several years ago, I guess now it is, a director Bong at the Oscars had said, when he won for Parasite, he said, if people could get over this 1-inch subtitles, there's a whole world out there of amazing storytelling. And I think if your experience is, okay, I'm going to go to an art house theater and I'm going to try to find this non-English film and I'm going to put all this effort and I'm going to get past the subtitles, for sure, there's that. Now it's just the access is there. I think we've really shown globally that with specific authentic storytelling, coupled with great subtitles and dubbing, with good recommendations and easy discovery, that a story can come from anywhere and excite an audience everywhere.
Your strategy has been pretty unique for a US-based streamer. Why is Netflix going so much more global than your competitors?
I've worked in many different countries and historically, you know, have had, you know, lots of jobs in Hollywood and linear networks and studios. And I think there was a really domestic focus, and then you sell later or after the fact, right? You can sell your title internationally. We're a global service and people in their homes click play and we're in 190 countries. We were always going to do storytelling, you know, locally in that way. So that's always just been a big part of our business.
Right. Well, that was my next question. Yeah. Like, is it paying off?
Yes. But I'd say it's also understanding that people in different countries, it's also the investment in local storytelling, right? So it takes time. Mm-hmm. And it's hard and it takes effort to spend time in those places, not have a Western lens on what that is, to really go to these countries, open the offices, meet with governments and local producers and local writers and understand each, you know, local kind of creative ecosystem. And so be close to the storytelling. Each of these countries and doing that has been with as much care and passion and interest and commitment and dedication, you know, as the U.S. was. And that's why we also did something which hasn't been done before really in that way, is that it's very important to have local teams with decision-making and budget and green light authority in the country and who understood really the nuances of that community.
Producers in South Korea, governments in Europe, have expressed concern that Netflix could become so successful and so powerful in some of these countries that it actually pushes out local media. How do you respond to that?
All of what we make, the investment in those countries, provide lots of jobs. And it's all local storytelling. It's local storytelling of people also exporting culture. If you think about it, when we make things on the ground, of just behind the camera, in front of the camera, the amount of production jobs. We also have a group, Grow Creative, that we do many training programs and pipeline programs to train people in different audiovisual in the medium. And so there's a big commitment to our investment in these countries and the local economy, which we've seen through just actually like jobs. And also what is hard to always quantify is exporting culture and the increase in tourism.
So what's your take on the state of the streaming wars broadly right now?
I don't think it's a winner-takes-all type of situation. And, you know, we've always had competition. There's competition everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So my job is as simple and hard as this. How do we make the best film and TV around the world consistently? How do we make sure you click play and you love what you watch and you come back? So that's really, you know, that's the focus for us. How do we do it across so many languages, across so many genres? How do we do it well in every country? And to me, the focus for us, I mean, that's the business we're in. That's all we do. That is the focus, which I really appreciate, having this clear focus on entertainment and audiences. And so that is really, I think, for me, the only thing I can speak to is to, like, continue to consistently work with the best creators around the world, push storytelling in a way that can be surprising and delightful and bold and original and fresh. I mean, if you think about Latin America from 2015 till now, some of these other countries, right, we've been really focusing on making originals the last 3 years and some 5 years and some, you know, only like 2 years. So there's still just so much growth. And for me, really, the focus is on that.
You know, we're talking so much about these other countries. Hollywood has been the center of global entertainment for a century. Is Hollywood's position as the center of global entertainment under threat?
So Hollywood's not going anywhere. There's great history of storytelling here. That's not going anywhere. But I think what it's done, it's just opened up more who gets to tell the story, what kinds of stories you tell, who sees their stories represented, who gets to tell those stories. And I think that, you know, an amazing thing. And I think this idea of there is just great storytelling all around the world, and now people just have access to more of it and from different points of view.
Connecting human-led responsible AI with rich data sets is driving innovation in new and unexpected ways. But financial services companies need a secure and resilient network to support AI architecture. With the Next Level Network from AT&T Business, AI data travels at low latency through reliable, fast connectivity. So financial leaders can focus on what matters most, a better future for their businesses and their customers. Learn about connected solutions from AT&T Business at att.com/y-att-business.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
After a huge push into original content, it does seem like Netflix is pulling back a little, reducing output a little, maybe. What's the strategy behind that? Or maybe stabilizing is a better
word. I don't think we're pulling back at all. I do not feel like it on this side. We're not. I think what you have to look at, which I think is so interesting, is that we started making more originals when expanding in different countries. Then in certain countries where we had done scripted, we started even expanding more into nonfiction in those countries and doing docs and unscripted. And, you know, if you think about even in Europe and some of those countries in France, we did a Tour de France sports thing. We did Rhythm and Flow, and we started expanding into unscripted. Only 7 years ago, we started building and expanded the entire unscripted group at Netflix. Mm-hmm. So for me, I think we're always expanding into new things.
So it costs so much money to make content at the level people expect now. And probably Netflix created that expectation or certainly played a huge role in it. Is the strategy sustainable?
Prices just kind of go up for lots of different reasons in lots of different ways, right? I mean, there's inflation and this is different products, not just TV and film. And I think you also have to remember, like, there are certain things that cost a lot because they're big and world building, and there are certain things that don't cost a lot because, you know, they're smaller character family dramas. And so it's not, you know, to me, it's definitely sustainable. The job is still always focusing on variety and quality. And to understand that people really do have eclectic taste and they watch a wide breadth of shows and films. And I think that pursuit of excellence and the pursuit of originality and working with the best creators and filmmakers in the world, that is just always the focus and the goal, because people love entertainment and they want to be entertained. And it creates such conversation and connection, and it's such a fun thing to recommend, and what are you watching? And you hear that. So for me, that's really kind of, that's the focus, how you sustain it.
You work really closely with Ted Sarandos, your co-CEO, who had this job before you had this job. You know, I'm curious what your partnership is like.
Ted and I have a very great relationship. I've worked for him for 7 years at this point, and he offered me first, you know, to come in and start unscripted, and then I said, you know, I haven't done that before. And he said, I don't care. I just hire smart people. And so we've gone through a lot together. And then he wanted me to go outside the U.S. and expand all of this. So we've worked very closely together. And I'd say we have a shorthand, but I'd say why we work so well together is the one thing we definitely have in common is we're both fans of film and TV. We're not jaded by it. We're not cynical. We love it. We're still excited about, did you watch this? And I think that actual joy and appreciation, like, we don't take it for granted. And I think that part that we both have really in common is why we work so well together. We just care a lot about the audiences, and we care a lot about the talent and the team. But this excitement of just watching the next great thing is great.
The next 5 years, what does it look like?
Next 5 years. I think it's just consistently want Netflix to be always the destination and the home of working with the best talent around the world. And that means for people who work here, to create an environment where they feel inspired and creative and can have fun. And if we can do that, that also provides that same environment for writers and directors and actors and filmmakers to come here and do their best work. And, you know, always continuing to be original and bold and fresh and pushing storytelling and not be scared to take the next big swing. So for me, the next 5 years is, you know, continuing to do this and surprise and delight our audiences all the time.
I can't wait to keep watching.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast edition of The Circuit. You can watch my visit to Latin America and the set of 100 Years of Solitude and a few of Netflix's other sets by checking out the full video episode of The Circuit. It was such a beautiful journey, full of so much color and culture and good food, and I'm so grateful to all of the people we met there. I'm Emily Chang. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Emily Chang TV. You can watch new episodes of The Circuit on Bloomberg Television or on demand by downloading the Bloomberg app to your smart TV or on YouTube. And check out other Bloomberg podcasts on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartMedia app, or wherever you listen to your shows. And let us know what you think by leaving us a review. I'm your host and executive producer. Our senior producers are Lauren Ellis and Alan Jeffries. Our associate producer is Tyler Cota. Our editor is Allison Casey. Thanks so much for listening.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.